Welcome, everybody, to another NPC's Weekly News Roundup. For the week of January 20th, 2024, here is what's making headlines. 343 is done with seasons in Halo Infinite. Xbox Developer Direct Recap. And Ubisoft thinks gamers will be comfortable not owning games. My name is Travis Sherman, and as always for the Weekly News Roundup, I'm joined by Kyle Immen. Kyle, howdy.
I'm here. What's up?
Yep, you're here. I'm here.
How's your week been?
It's been a week.
Oh my gosh.
I am still exhausted. I have not recovered in any way, shape, or form. And I know going into this next week, it's going to be just as chaotic. 10 out of 10 would not do again.
Yeah. Unfortunately, neither of us have had a chance to try out PAL World. I know.
No.
I have it installed.
I need to go install it. I guess they're under a little bit of fire right now. We don't have it in our news links or anything, of course, but they're under a little bit of fire for potentially using AI-generated content because a lot of people... given that PAL World's so popular. You know what? We'll add it in here to the news stuff here to talk about this. So I was reading this here. We'll take this a little bit more informally. I was reading this on Video Games Chronicle. But apparently PAL World is under scrutiny just because it looks like a lot of the what they're called PALs is what the actual creatures are. You know, we call Pokemon, of course. But they're called PALs in this game. And a lot of people have been making comparisons of these characters to Pokemon, because that's the first thing that comes to mind. And when making these comparisons, they've been doing more deep dives into the actual designs of the characters themselves, or more specifically, like different features of them. There was one that had like the face of Galarian Meowth. There was another one that was kind of like looked like a splice of a couple different Pokemon just all together, just different features. There was another one where they compared like the fin of this water Pokemon to a water Pokemon from Pokemon, where it was almost like one for one. And while there could be a lot of coincidences on things anyway, too, you know, if you're inspired by things like the Pokemon game series, or of course you look at the other games that have these types of creatures in them, you know, like we'll throw Digimon out there as an example, too. Mm-hmm. One of the key things is that it's like, okay, well, you know, you may not have realized it, but designing these characters, they just kind of get those same features. But what a lot of people have gone and dug back on is that apparently the CEO of the developer for PAL World actually has made some comments regarding AI and how it should be adopted into the development life cycle for video games. And even had a game here. Let me see if I can actually find the link for you on this, Kyle, so you can see what I'm talking about. I'll drop this to you in our Discord.
Cool.
So you can take a look at this here. But, and I'll make sure this gets in the show notes too here at the end. But what he goes on, or what these sleuths have gone on and said, is that the one of the previous titles for this developer... where's the developer's name here? Studio is called Pocket Pair. Apparently, they had a title called AI Art Imposter. And according to the article here, it says a game which literally utilizes an AI image generator as its core mechanic. And then, again, the comment I made there about the CEO for Pocket Pair, Takuro Mizobe, he appeared to praise the potential of AI image generators for content creation. So... that's one of the things, and like people went and dug up a lot of the previous comments that the CEO of Pocket Pair has actually made regarding AI on Twitter, and some of the things he's put up there, just basically calling it out. So if you look at the link though, and some of these things that have been added from Twitter on here, you can see where some of these things may have come from. And again, I'm one to give the benefit of the doubt here, where a gamer who has played through all of the Pokemon games, and you think we've been there since we were kids too, there might be some of these things that are in their head and they put them together. You know, it's like, oh, I didn't mean to copy Pokemon, but I was trying to make something new and unique. But that's where I'll give some of the benefit of the doubt. But you really look close at some of these character designs, and it's like, okay, what is really happening here? So it's I feel like there's going to need to be a little bit more review here on this just to kind of understand what could be going on with the AI side of it. I mean, what do you think? Just from some of these things that are posted up here so far, just kind of sharing around what, you know, some people are calling out for potential AI-generated content.
I mean, I could see the AI potentially being trained off of literally just images of Pokemon with the way some of the comparisons are drawn. But to the same effect, I mean, if you ask someone to draw something for you and you ask 150 people to do it, there's still a chance that some of them are going to adopt the same features, especially if they've, you know, had the same experiences relatively recently. If that experience correlates to a video game and they're designing something for a video game, they might draw specifically on that. I think the whole thing with the Growlithe face and everything and the eyeballs, that's kind of a stretch. I mean, that's a very common tropish face when you think about it, as far
especially
as,
in,
like,
anime it is.
That's exactly what I was gonna say.
Yeah.
It's a very tropish face for like a trolly or like, I guess, obnoxious character that wouldn't necessarily be human, or, you know, the teeth might be representatory of a human that is more obnoxious, the character that would get on your nerves anyway. It could be a far stretch, but it's hard to say that, you know, hey, I mean, they're designing a game that's kind of about Pokemon. It's easy to see that, you know, they started designing the characters and all of a sudden they started looking more and more like Pokemon because they probably played Pokemon games leading up to the development of, you know, the design for the game to get ideas for it.
I think so. That's why I'm giving the benefit of the doubt, but I would obviously like more details and information on this as well, because I do see both sides of it. Again, I'll throw the benefit of the doubt out there that, you know, a lot of inspiration from Pokemon, but there are some things out there that these internet sleuths, these gamers who really pay attention to a lot of these things, are actually picking up on and do offer some, you know, I guess some potential evidence of AI usage here in this case. Well, and it's becoming more ubiquitous in the industry anyway, don't get me wrong. And it's getting to a point, like with what we talked about last week with Valve introducing those new AI rules for, or AI generated content rules for things being listed on Steam. So,
I don't know. There's, I guess, a fine line there. And if they are using a direct one-for-one Pokemon as a trainer for AI, it's on the developers to actually go in and modify the characters beyond just color shifts and, you know, slight modifications here and there. But I don't know. I think this would have been a bigger issue earlier on if it were a real thing.
Possibly. I think what's happening, though, is that like maybe a lot of this wasn't being picked up on when the game was originally announced in that too, because there hadn't been enough information out there on what all of the creatures were going to be. And now the game's out there and it's one of the best selling games out there right now. It's one of the more played games out there right now too, just with its popularity, a lot of these things are being picked up on.
Before I hopped on, I believe I saw they had just hit 40,000. Or something like that. Or
40,000 and what? Because they're way up there.
Well, I don't even know. Let me double check that number. Oh, excuse me. 3 million in 40 hours. I don't even know what I was thinking. Yeah, this was posted at 6:14 this evening. So obviously they're probably a little bit higher than 3 million copies sold in 40 hours.
Yeah, because right now, according to Steam, they've got only very positive reviews at 20,807 there. So it's definitely very popular with what's going on in there. But, you know, again, just we'll give it time. Let's just see what comes of it. We're right in the middle anyway, and of course we'll report on what comes out of this as time does go on.
Absolutely.
But let's move into what was announced at in the opening of the podcast here, of course.
Before I interrupted.
No, you're cool, man. You're cool. It was definitely worth it to talk about. It was a news story that was published today, so all good. But the first main story we had here on the list was talking about 343. So the Halo Infinite devs had their live stream talking about the upcoming things for Halo Infinite, which will be dropping on January 30th. So they're adding a new operation, Spirit of Fire, which is going to be adding new customization options. We're going to be getting a new map. There's going to be adding stuff to Forge, and we are getting a brand new armor core, which is based on the Spartan 4 armor that we first saw in the Halo Wars series. So, of course, you think like in the timeline pre-Master Chief. But one of the things that they announced in this is that they are going to be shifting away from seasons. So when Halo Infinite dropped, of course, and this has been the thing that's been going on anyway for the last, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 years, is that games like free-to-play games have been trying to drive people in by offering seasons of content instead of just being the same game all the time. And of course, those seasons were generally paid for models where it's like you'd pay to unlock a battle pass and to earn additional content. You could earn free stuff, but you'd earn additional things. Everybody knows the spiel with seasons and battle passes and that, Kyle especially. But the key part is that they're moving away from this. They're moving into just specifically an operations model, and they're going to be making this more in line with what's offered in the Master Chief Collection right now, which is the culmination of all of the Halo games from Halo 1, 2, 3, Reach, and I don't think ODST was included in that one, but I think it may go up to 4. I can't remember. Maybe even 5. I don't remember how far 5 was into that one. I think at least 4. But even so, they've decided that, yeah, they are moving away from it. And they say here, for Master Chief Collection players, this is probably going to sound very familiar. The gist of it is we're no longer referring to seasons. We're shifting away from them. So they're going to be starting to offer more of these operations, which are going to be short, several week long events. And they're going to be apparently free events that you can then earn your different armor unlocks. You've got your visor colors, you've got your armor colors, you've got your little tags, all that, your little charms is what I want to call them too. You unlock all of those still, and that will still happen, but right now that's what they're doing. It seems like there's a little bit of speculation here on this one, is it kind of seems like they might be putting Halo Infinite into more of just a long-term support model, where we're not going to be getting these big releases of content. We're going to be getting more of a steady release, but it's going to be more just like a flat release type thing. We're still going to have interesting, cool things to see, but it sounds like it might be going flat. So what they say here is, for us here at the studio, it's going to be an exciting year for Halo. We have a dedicated team working on supporting Halo Infinite and continuing to deliver going forward. But also, yes, we have additional teams that are accelerating towards the future, working on brand new projects. There are lots of things cooking here. So a lot of people are taking that away from, like, or taking away from that they are going to continue to be supporting Infinite, but it's going to be in the same way that the Master Chief Collection is right now. Nothing big, nothing crazy, still some exciting stuff, but it's going to be more just long-term support right now. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing per se, but it does kind of make me wonder if we're actually on the cusp of hearing about a new Halo title sometime in at least the next year to year and a half.
Yeah, that's kind of what it sounds like to me, that we potentially are kind of closing out the chapter on Halo Infinite as far as multiplayer goes. Like, it, exactly what you said, going into that long-term mode, that they're not going to be doing the big updates. I don't know. It's a good thing, but also, I don't know. I feel like it's almost a bad thing as well. Maybe not, though. I hate to say that, but just because they started out in that format and just to move in this way so quickly and not and still be, I guess, locked out of certain seasons when we've been able to redo certain events and certain seasons, complete battle passes for those, but there were certain ones we've been locked out of. I don't know. It's really weird the way they've progressed the multiplayer. I'm kind of happy, though, like I said, that they are doing this shift, so I don't have to worry about battle passes to get new content for the game. I can actually just earn it instead. That's the way it should have been in the first place with a Halo game. They should have just stuck to the old format.
Yeah, I mean, it's not necessarily like it was the worst thing in the world, because it's, in this day and age, it's kind of expected that you're just gonna, it's like, oh, this is a free to play multiplayer, cool. Oh, there's a battle pass, okay. It's the norm now, unfortunately. Yeah. And with that being the norm, I guess it really isn't a surprise to see them kind of taking this shift to the other way, because this last event we've had, or at least this last season prior, there weren't any credits to earn in there. And so I ended up blowing away the rest of my credits by paying for the kind of like premium bump up with the more recent operations. And so those are gone. But even with that said, I haven't been earning any other coins there, because they originally changed the model where you can earn enough coins to buy the next battle pass. And we've been doing that for literally the last like year or 2 years. So it's kind of like it was already written on the wall that this is what was going to be happening, but it may not necessarily be a bad thing. I mean, they are still, I feel like, innovating with things. That brand new map like we were looking at last night, and the ability to shift to being invisible in that one area, and then you immediately shift out of it once you go in. It's, you know, they're not shying away from doing different things. Plus, they're still supporting the Forge community quite a bit with a lot of the quality of life improvements and things they're adding. It means at least that the community still may be getting some fresh stuff, but a lot of that fresh stuff may be more of an offering from the Forge community than it will be directly from 343. I don't know, but that's kind of the approach I'm seeing right now.
In a way, it makes me kind of wary too, because it feels like it's very end of life. In a multiplayer game that seems to only have just gotten its ground, like fully gotten its ground. I mean, Halo's always been Halo, but this one's kind of just been, it's had its rocky periods, and I don't know, it the fact that it has had so many rocky periods with wonky battle passes, and you know, it too difficult, and then not then like extremely easy to complete. There was just the balancing, I guess, was just off the wall. I don't know, it seems weird that it's going into that end of life phase so quickly. At least it
I don't
feels
think
quickly
it's,
for me.
And, I mean, I don't think it's necessarily end of life. That's the thing, is that I feel like it's not.
That's just what it feels like.
I'll make
I
sure
guess.
That's clear. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's been rumors that Master Chief Collection's been going that way right now, that there's been things going around that says that they may be going that route. So maybe they'll shift Master Chief Collection devs to potentially support Infinite for several more years.
Yeah, and I've heard that as well, and I guess it is quite a misspeak to say it is that end of life phase, because it's not end of life. It's just that that phase where they're not going to be working on it nearly as much. And to me, I guess part of me feels a little bit slighted because I have been paying for some of the battle passes anyway, because I used the credits in other ways, or I decided that I needed the extra boost when I really didn't. So I purchased the extra 20 levels, and I shouldn't have. But
you think, though, is that we put money forward also for Gundam Evolution. And where is that right now?
Yeah, and it's in the can. But
so it's a risk that gamers are going to take with battle passes and such, though. That's just the circumstance of a game you don't necessarily own in the sense.
But it's also the lack of content, too. That wasn't in multiplayer when we've been cranking so much money into it, you know.
That's fair. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think there are a few things that were definitely blunders for sure, but I feel like they've added in quite a bit more that's definitely been enjoyable. It's just taken a lot longer than we were really anticipating.
Yeah. Yeah, and maybe that's just why I feel so slighted by it. But I think long term it is beneficial to the overall game and to the gamers and anyone that enjoys playing the game. This is definitely a benefit to those players. I just hope that, you know, any of those extra XP boosts that I saved up aren't going to go in the dumpster.
You were asking for a lot, sir.
Oh, I know, because I've got like, I think 106 of them or something.
Well, we got enough operations at least that you might be able to burn through them. We'll see what happens.
Right. I hope so. Yeah. I hope so.
All right. Well, that's enough on the Halo stuff, but we have more Xbox stuff to talk about, and that is the Xbox Developer Direct. So the Xbox developers have gotten together. We had Obsidian there. We had Ninja Theory. We had Machine Games, of course. We had, who is this that actually worked on? Who was this? It was, who worked on Aura here? It was Oxide Games, and then, of course, a surprise from Square Enix hopping in as well, too. So let's kind of go through some of these announcements that we had in this and some of the discussions. So first off, they talked about Avowed, and they did announce that will be launching fall of this year, 2024. And they did show some gameplay that went into the combat, to the reactivity of the environment, to, of course, the very vibrant level of details in what they call the Living Lands. So it's going to follow along with the way Obsidian has always created their games. And I believe it does actually look very gorgeous. It's also got some of those styles there, too. Like, if you're used to any of the other RPG games that come out of, say, like BioWare or Bethesda here, where your choices can actually have an impact to the rest of the game, too. That will be another thing that will make its way into Avowed. And I think that's always fun. You know, choose your own adventure.
Yeah, I think it looks really cool. I'm excited to see more on it. I don't know. These type of games, they're always super intriguing to me, and I have to, like, I guess pump the brakes on my excitement, because sometimes I don't get what I expect, but this one looks really cool, and I mean, Obsidian at the helm, you know it's going to be a good game, so...
Yeah, I think so. I really do. Like, I've always liked Obsidian titles.
Yeah.
And so I'm really excited. I just wish that they would do another Fallout New Vegas. That's just me. Like, New Vegas 2.
But, well, this one basically looks like Fallout meets that, like, Elder Scrolls in a way, with the guns and the sword play and everything. So, yeah. And, of course, the spells and whatnot. I don't know. I'm excited to see how they, I guess, potentially maybe spells could interact with other weapons, specifically the guns, because I mean they show the you know, freezing the guy and then shattering him with the axe or whatever, but I want to see more of how you could utilize the spells with different weapons, especially like seeing the gravity one and whatnot. It just looks really, really cool. And I like the bright, vibrant colors of everything in that one. Definitely unique. It's going to look really cool if you have an OLED, but it is going to probably look a little bit more cartoony, unfortunately, being so vibrant.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. But I don't know. I like stylistic games like this, so it kind of gets me excited.
Yeah, and the next one here on the list I'm very excited for, and it's Senua's Saga Hellblade 2, which they officially announced will be launching this summer. May 21st is when this game is going to be launching, and it will be on Game Pass, and it will be on Steam, and it's, oh my god, I'm so excited for this. So, of course, the original game looked fantastic already. And of course, it was interesting to dive into a game where they had actually worked with psychologists and that to deal with like actually the approach of what psychosis really was. Senua was still affected by that in this. And of course, you know, the events of the first game did not really do anything to help that. So of course, she's still suffering from these exact same problems. And they've still worked with dedicated professionals on making sure that they didn't take any sort of light approach to it, that they dealt with what the real stuff was. The upgrades and graphics, though, look fantastic, too. Of course, they're still doing a lot of the motion capture work with the original motion capture actress, and it just looks gorgeous. And then, of course, of the combat looks to be very similar, though, too, to the other one. But I'm more excited to actually see what's going to be happening, because she'll be on ice in Iceland now instead of where she was at in Northern Europe.
Well, and for me with Senua, it's not just about the graphics. The sound design was off the charts in the first game. I mean, it really made you feel like you were suffering from sight, especially if you were playing with headphones or like in a room that you could really turn up the like a 7.1 surround sound, specifically because there were so many points that the voices were coming from, that if you had a really good pair of noise-canceling, isolating headphones that had good surround in them, or a good surround sound system that you could turn up, the audio was off the charts, and they're actually trying to push the fidelity of that even in this game, too. So I'm excited to see what schizophrenia sounds like in the next gen, or I guess what is now the current gen, so...
Yeah, and that's what really excites me, too, is because, yes, they did do a great job with it. And I'm looking forward to the eeriness I felt when I played the first one with exactly like that, with that exact same, like, headphone setup, and hearing all of, like, the different, like, thoughts kind of, like, echoing around you and the different voices and that, and then pulling my headphones off and everything where my desk is at just being absolute silence.
Yeah, and you were like,
just, like,
oh,
no other audio or anything. And it's fantastic to think that... It's like, that's just something that drives, because I am personally one who doesn't do well with horror games. I mean, this is definitely more of it's a combat game, but it's definitely got that very deep psychological terror portion of it with what she's going through, dealing with, and she's observing. And so having that with that surround sound type headset, it's incredible. And so, yes, you're absolutely right. With them pushing the envelope on this next one, I'm so excited. And it's in May. Yeah. It's May 21st, dude. It's so close now. I'm so excited. Another one, though, here, Kyle, coming up here, and this was a surprise. Nobody expected this one. It's coming out summer 2024. We are getting a new entry into the Mana series. Square Enix was there on the developer direct to announce that they are bringing their next game, Visions of Mana. It's the first one they're adding to Xbox directly. It's a debut of this game on Xbox, and it's the first Mana game that's come out in the last 15 years.
I love the Mana games.
Just
saying. I've always loved them. I think the first one I ever played was probably on Super NES, actually. Secret of Mana? Yeah, that sounds about right. But I think I've rebought them on PC. I just haven't gotten around to replaying them. And this one, it's no exception. It looks fantastic. The new graphics. I mean, it's definitely reminiscent of the old style, but modernized. And it's one that I'll definitely be, if nothing else, playing on, I imagine, Game Pass, if they imagined it, or if they announced it at the Developer Direct. But if not, I'll probably pick this one up.
I believe so. They said specifically it was going to be launching on Xbox Series X and S and on PC this summer, but there's nothing that specifically calls out if it's going to be joining Game Pass. But this would be one that I would actually see you buying. And if it is coming out on PC, I don't know if it's going to be available on like Steam or something, though, or if it's just specifically through Xbox's PC app. But if it does come out on Steam, there's one to add to your Steam Deck, Kyle.
Yeah, no doubt, because I think I have every other one that's available on Steam downloaded on my Steam Deck right now.
Yeah. Of course, though, what we've got next outside of that surprise is we've got Aura History Untold. So if you are a fan of games such as Civilization or what was that more recent one that came out that I liked was Humankind, any of those types of like environment builders or anything, that's what this game is going to be. So they showed off more details, of course, on and feature sets in this game. And, you know, I actually have a love for these types of games. There was one LAN party that I had gone to like years ago, and we inadvertently played Civ 4 at this LAN party. And we ended up, like, we had a whole other slew of games to play, but we got stuck playing Civ 4 for like 7 hours.
Oh, God.
7 hours straight of Civ 4. And it was still fun. Like, don't get me wrong. But yeah, it was because you had like 9 people playing Civ at the same time. And so I really like these games. And so I'm excited for another one to be added. It looks good. I mean, the thing is, like, I feel like you can't go wrong with any type of game like this. So the fact, though, that it's going to be on PC Game Pass, though, and it's going to be launching here in the fall means that it might be a good one, especially when it starts to get colder outside, to actually sit back and play, especially for one of those like long-term ones where you can actually kind of get up and step away too.
Yeah, for sure. I think this could be an interesting one, especially if you're into the Civ games. I don't know. It also seems to have a little bit of Age of Empires to it, but not in the sense.
Yes, that was the other one I was thinking of.
Yeah, not necessarily in the sense that you're directly controlling troops, but more in the sense that you are still placing the buildings, you're still having to worry about the economy and in specific ways and, you know, things that would generate your economy. So that there is, I guess, parts of Age of Empires and SimCity in it, but it is definitely, the way it looks, more of a Civilization-style game.
100%. 100%. So I'm looking forward to it. I think Kyle will have to get it this fall and just see what we can do playing against each other and the PC as well.
Right.
Yeah. And then, of course, the big one that everybody was waiting for, and, of course, the name leaked out before the Developer Direct, is what Machine Games and Bethesda has been working on for their Indiana Jones title. So the official title is going to be Indiana Jones and the Great Circle, and it will be launching this year, but they do not have an official date announced for it. And we have found, or we have been shown full gameplay footage here, development footage, the whole works. And it's great. Like, it's tough to really describe the breadth of it, because you need to go watch the video if you haven't yet. But it's been revealed that Troy Baker is actually voicing Indiana Jones. And he does a really good job of sounding like Harrison Ford. If you really listen to it, it's like you wouldn't know the difference. So this game itself appears, and a lot of people made this comparison, and I myself included, but I don't feel like this is the worst comparison, is that it's if you're a fan of Uncharted, you're going to see a lot of similarities in this, at least in the way the gameplay is set up, that you're on this treasure hunt trying to figure out why the museum that Indiana is working at was broken into, and this weird unknown relic was taken. You end up at the Vatican for something, but you're using your whip to take people down. You're sneaking around trying to get away from the Nazis and that too. There's a lot happening, but it does feel like an Uncharted title.
Well, and not just using your whip to take down people, but using your whip to disarm or
and to get
arm
around.
Yourself. Yeah, using your whip for traversal. I think I remember messaging you that after seeing the trailer, it reminded me of the first time I saw Indiana Jones when I was like, I think 4 or 5. And I found my dad's bullwhip and I was out in the backyard trying to like whip it onto the pole of the clothesline and swing. And it didn't work, of course, but I was Indiana Jones, and this is like the closest thing. And it filled me with just utter glee seeing it in the trailer. And I was like, wow, this is going to be awesome.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I love that. I love that. Yeah. You were telling me about that last night and I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
Kids will be kids, I suppose, when it comes to some of that sometimes too, because like we just get into goofy stuff anyway. But I get that. I especially do because, yeah, you're using it as a weapon. You're using it to disarm. You're using it as a movement mechanic too. We saw it being used to scale a wall. We saw it being used for going across a zip line. I'm sure there are other things we haven't seen here yet, but it looks cool. And according to Machine Games, this game takes place between Raiders of the Lost Ark and Temple of Doom. So this is... This is post face melting and pre Kali Ma.
Well, and you know, because it's Machine Games, they know how to do Nazis.
They know how to do Nazis in, more specifically. They know how to make you kill Nazis.
Yeah, they know how to make you kill Nazis and make you 100%. Hate the Nazis. So there's that.
Yeah, their reputation with Wolfenstein precedes them. But
right?
Yes. So yeah, this is awesome. I'm really excited for this, though, and to see that, too. But again, they've only announced that it is coming out this year. They have not said when. I would kind of imagine that if these other two titles or the other couple titles in here that were announced, they're going to be dropping in the fall. I wouldn't be surprised to see this at some point in the fall as well, like maybe some sort of like holiday release, just to allow for the finer things to be worked out and... you know, for something to play when we're all locked inside because of, you know, snowstorms or the holidays and that, you know, be an exciting one to play.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
In the meantime, though, let's carry on here to our last story, Kyle. And this one has drawn the ire of everybody. And I'm talking everybody. So Ubisoft believes that people won't care that they can't own their games anymore. So more specifically, the director of subscriptions over at Ubisoft, Philippe Tremblay, says that with their rebranding of Ubisoft Plus, with some of the subscription stuff, they did a PC version of the classic tier. Apparently, he said their goal is to get players comfortable with not owning their games. Of course, for a lot of the stuff we've seen, Kyle, we've become exposed to subscription services for everything, games really included. I mean, we've got Xbox Game Pass, we've got PlayStation Plus now too, with the way that their subscription stuff has changed. We've got EA Play. We do have Ubisoft Plus though too. I mean, it goes on. Like the list goes on for the number of subscription services, but even with that, people still love to own games. I mean, to actually have a physical game in your hand to be able to tangibly, like, you know, manipulate. It is a shame, of course, they don't come packed with manuals anymore, but I digress. People still buy physical copies, and they are going to for a long time. I mean, hell, look, we've had the resurgence of vinyl in the last, like, decade. And look at how much more vinyl is on the shelves now versus, like, CDs, you know? It's just, it's like, that's one of those things. But
well,
he had,
I think it's funny that Ubisoft is taking this stance, or Ubisoft is taking this stance, especially with, you know, the video game preservation becoming such a big thing in the last, like, 8 to 10 years, maybe even a little bit longer, that it's become so big. And beyond that, during the COVID period, there was such a resurgence in game collecting. Specifically, you know, you think about some of the Nintendo games that shot up, GameCube games, and then there were games that were being disabled on services that people were going nuts over physical copies for, like, 360 copies of games.
Yeah, right.
Because they were being shut down on storefronts online.
Jeez, yeah, and that's the big problem, is that we do have all of that stuff that does get shut down. The article here from Kotaku does make that clear. So let me go ahead and read off here what exactly Tremblay had said in this interview with GI.biz. He said, one of the things we saw is that gamers are used to, a little bit like DVD, having and owning their games. That's the consumer shift that needs to happen. They got comfortable not owning their CD collection or DVD collection. That's a transformation that has been a bit slower to happen in games. As gamers grow comfortable in that aspect, you don't lose your progress. If you resume your game at another time, your progress file is still there. That's not been deleted. You don't lose what you've built in the game or your engagement with the game. So it's about feeling comfortable with not owning your game. So this is what he goes on to say, as well as he says, but as people embrace that model, they will see that these games will exist, the service will continue, and you'll be able to access them when you feel like it. And Kotaku makes it clear here in the next line, saying, but we know this isn't true. We know how often services don't continue, or how many games are no longer available. That's exactly it. We're not going to be seeing this revolutionary shift over to a strictly subscription model for access to games, I don't think, for like a while, for at least another decade in my mind, until they literally force this on us.
Well,
I think I'm just saying, though, is that we're still going to have access to physical copies. We're still going to have access mm-hmm. to, you know, to hard copies of anything, especially if Nintendo continues down the path of using cartridges. It's so weird, though, that he would be so blind to this, that, you know, it is nice to have access to a subscription service to access all these games that you want, but the feeling of physically having a game is something that can't be replaced. And I think for a lot of gamers out there, that's not going to go away.
Well, and I think it's funny, immediately after the announcement of this, the number of memes that started floating around basically saying, oh, exactly, it's okay for me to pirate my games from you now? It's like,
yeah, if I don't own them, I obviously can just do that, right?
Yeah, if you're not going to let me own them, I can just pirate them, right? Because you're just saying that you're going to take them away eventually. You're going to charge me for this service that I'm going to pay for an indefinite amount of time, because the games that I want to play are going to be on the service for a potential indefinite amount of time.
Yeah. But of course, it also depends on how things trend as well, though, too. I was reading these comments here on the Kotaku article, because sometimes they offer some insight as well. And so I like this comment here, Kyle. I want to read this to you. One person here says, got comfortable and begrudgingly accepted the lack of alternatives are two very different things. And so this guy replies here talking about LOL, lack of alternatives. That's ridiculously false and a flat out lie, and goes on about, you know, having more options than ever. So this other person replies here and makes a very good point. And I want you to kind of consider this, though, too, especially like with, you know, how we end up getting forced into some of these things. Mm-hmm. They say here, it's like, are you seriously saying that it's just as possible to go to a music store or video store and buy a DVD, CD, or Blu-ray as it was 10 years ago? Have you seen a mall lately? Been to a Best Buy to peruse their media section? And that's where they make that clear, is that like Best Buy has already announced that they are getting away from physical media in their stores, mm-hmm. more targeted really at like their movies and their music. But we will still see physical video games in their store, at least for the foreseeable future. However, that is the one thing, is that as the industry starts to kind of like realize how much more profitable subscription services are instead of just a one and done sale, maybe we get forced into something like that sooner. But I don't see that happening in the video game industry just yet. I feel like we still have a while to go before it's just completely forced on you, but it's going to depend on how some of these other games come out. Like I didn't mention it though, but apparently Hellblade 2 is going to be a digital only release. There is going to be no physical release of Hellblade 2.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, that was one thing I was hearing about. But apparently it's going to drop the price, though, so it's going to only be, like, I think a $50 game.
Interesting. Well, this kind of gives me an opportunity to make mention of something that isn't going to be mentioned in the quest markers, but it's also something that is coming up a lot lately because it's a shift that happened at Game, which is basically the European or English version of GameStop.
GameStop.
Yeah.
Yep, and I've been to one.
That they are no longer taking in trade-ins.
Yeah, that is a massive shift.
But part of the reason that they are no longer taking in trade-ins is because gamers are actually collecting their games and hanging on to their physical copies more often than not. I think the thing that we're actually seeing now isn't necessarily that people aren't wanting to buy physical copies of games, because if you look at the console sales in and of itself, the digital consoles, yes, they do sell, but they sell as an alternative to buying the disc version of a console. I'd be willing to put money on the fact that if you put out a Blu-ray drive for the Series S, people would buy it just because they want access to the physical media. They want to be able to use them for Blu-ray DVD players on top of maybe physically rip songs to their system. There's lots of people that still like to do that. It does become more niche. Don't get me wrong, and maybe that is it. The gaming market is a little bit more niche, but it's a larger niche market as far as like physical media. That's one thing that people have to concern. Yeah, you can curtail the physical media, but if you straight up take away physical media and take away the ability to own games, I feel like there's a large number of gamers that will either pirate your games or just not play them because they can't actually, if they enjoy the game, they won't be able to physically own it. So why bother?
I think there's a lot of it also. You're on the right track. I think a lot of it also stems too from even like the argument around DRM as well.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, you know, by being able to physically own your game, if you could be able to play it without having to be connected to the internet for something, then there are a lot of people who are going to do things like that. But one of those things too, of course, that really does prevent a lot of stuff from happening is, of course, the DRM. And this kind of just locks people into a DRM-based environment where, not owning your thing, you're kind of restricted on some of the things you could potentially do with it. Now, I'm not trying to talk like illicit things, but there are people who do make legitimate backups of their physical media, so that way in case something does happen, they do have a way to recover it. Now, I know in the other sense, there are people who do that just to be able to put it out there and exploit it just for privacy purposes. But what I'm talking about is just being able to physically have something and being able to know that it's yours and you can do something with it is vastly different than just subscribing to something all the time. Because if that thing does rely on the internet, you're stuck. Like the thing there is like, oh, you can go play somewhere else and then you can access your save file here and keep playing. What happens if the internet completely goes out and you can't get to your save file?
Well,
you know, but it's like the only thing you've got to do is just to play that game on your non-internet connected device.
That's
now
why
you either have to start over. Or
yeah. And that's why sites like Good Old Games are so successful. Because, you know, you can purchase your games without DRM, and once you've downloaded it, you have access to the executable, to the install file. Everything is all-inclusive right there. It's basically like having the physical media to install to. But that being said, if you ever lose your internet connection, you're responsible for that download. I mean, if you don't have an internet connection for a long time and that download's set on an old hard drive for a while and it happens to have bit rot and you lose files, or, you know, you just lose a jump drive that it happens to be on, well, you got to get on the internet and download it again anyway.
Yeah, exactly. But it's definitely been interesting to see how this has played out so far. It's definitely not the best take, but I'll admit Ubisoft has not been really on their A game for any of this stuff lately. So
this is definitely an ignorant step. I mean, I don't know. I feel like this is almost a step at looking at how successful mobile gaming is and saying, oh yeah, we can do that with regular gaming. And it's the same, but it's not. It really is not, because mobile gaming is, I feel like a lot of mobile gamers are your sit down and play for 5 minutes, and they might play the game five times, and that's it, 5 minutes, five times.
Exactly.
Whereas a lot of console gamers, they'll play a game, and then they'll play it again, and they'll play it again, and some of them might even get all the achievements. Some of them play it once, all the way through, and they sell it. But it's having the freedom to do so and the freedom to actually own your game. That's what's important to a lot of gamers.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, yeah, we kind of leave the main stories, at least with that sour taste in our mouth.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that is it, though, for the main stories. Kyle, there are a couple quest markers to wrap up this week's news with, so take it away, buddy.
Yes, sir. So, for this week's quest markers, GameStop stops supporting NFTs and everyone rejoiced. Wait, what? GameStop was selling NFTs? That's right. GameStop was actually selling NFTs at one point. And actually, now they're not. So, I don't know if there's really a lot to say about this. I've been a big advocate that NFTs don't belong in video games. NFTs don't belong anywhere near video games. That's cool if people make NFTs about video games, but it shouldn't be in the video game realm. Like, no. So, hooray for GameStop not selling NFTs or supporting NFTs, even though that I don't necessarily support that company.
Wonder why.
Yeah. And then in our last quest marker for this week, Call of Duty didn't top the yearly sales chart for the first time since 2009. Lo and behold, of course, the lackluster release of Modern Warfare 3 with its abysmal campaign and, I guess, samey multiplayer, really. I mean, they brought back some features, but it was fairly samey. Actually, Hogwarts Legacy as the top game of the year, which, if you haven't played it, fantastic game. Down from that, though, number three, unfortunately, was one of the yearly spam games as Madden NFL 24. And number four was Marvel Spider-Man, five with Legend of Zelda, and six with Diablo. So, unfortunately, some of those ending ones that are towards the middle could have come up a little ways, but I am really happy that Hogwarts made it into that top spot. So, hooray for beating out the yearly grind.
Fantastic.
But with that is our last quest marker of this week.
And because that was the last quest marker, that is it for the weekly news roundup for the week of January 20th, 2024. So thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in to this week's news roundup. If you like what you're listening to, be sure to go subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform of choice. If you're not sure of where to listen to us, you can check us out over on our homepage at anchor.fm/the-mbcs-podcast, and all of the different platforms you're supported on are listed there. Again, thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. We will catch you all next week.
Laters.